Hello and welcome to another episode of the Uncommon Energy Podcast. Plenty for us to talk about this week. We'll kick off this week's episode talking about the results from the Lille Regional Championships that took place in France over the past weekend. They almost let a Blissey win the tournament. Didn't quite happen, though. We'll talk about a little bit of news from the TCG Live developers, a letter to the community that came out a couple of weeks ago. We'll break it down, give our thoughts, talk about that. Of course, we'll have everyone's favorite segment, Guess That Flavor Text. And then we'll talk a little bit about gentlemen's agreements in the Pokemon TCG and why breaking them is the worst thing you could do as a Pokemon TCG player. My name is Trainer Chip Ritchie, and I'm joined here, as always, by my friend and co-host, Azul GG. What's up, Azul? How we doing, man? What's up?
I'm doing pretty good. I say this every week, but I'm getting back into the swing of things as far as content creation goes. I only streamed a couple times last week, but I'm going to be going, you know, full steam into it this week. Getting back into everything, it feels like, because it's been a little while. But a note on the Lille results. Blissey almost winning. I remember a couple European players, either on Facebook or on Twitter, you know, making some cheeky posts about our Milwaukee results where Blissey got second and Duraludon won. And now, you know, they forgot to put Drapion in their decks. So then Mew wins and Blissey gets second. So we all make mistakes sometimes. I'm excited for the podcast as we've got some interesting stuff to talk about. I mean, you guys all know I love talking about TCG Live, so there'll be a rant coming up later, but I'm doing good, Chip. How about you? How was your week?
I'm doing good. Yeah, had a good week. Today is actually, we had the baby's 2-month checkup, and he is doing great. Got a good report at the doctor, so that is very good, and we're very thankful for that. I've also been playing a bunch of Marvel Snap this past week. It came out, I think, last Wednesday or Thursday. I downloaded it, I think, the day after it came out. And I've been playing it a decent amount. It's actually a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it. It's a game. The games are really quick. They only last 6 turns. And for anyone who doesn't know, Marvel Snap is Marvel, not sponsored or anything, but Marvel's new, like, mobile card battler. I think you can also download it on your computer as well. I think it's mainly meant to be a mobile game, and it's a really quick game. Games only last 6 turns. You build a 12 card deck, and the game just feels so good to play. Like, moving cards around, they all have different attributes and animations. All the card effects are really unique, and you get to see all of your favorite Marvel characters, some Marvel characters I've never even heard of as well, which is kind of funny too, like looking up who these people are and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just a lot of fun, and it feels really great to play. It makes me really sad for PTCG Live, but it's been a good game for me to play, because while I'm having to sit and hold the baby, I can play Marvel Snap in my other hand, because it's very easy to play with one hand, so that's definitely a plus. But
yeah, I played a little bit myself so far, and it is a ton of fun. I haven't probably put quite as much time in as you have, and it does hurt a little bit with seeing how clean of a it's a good product. It's a great product. Looks nice, plays well, everything is fast and fluid, and of course the games are super super short, which is, you know, makes it a little bit easier for that to be a thing. But it does, of course, hit home a little bit when we have, you know, when we're still working with PTCG Live in its current form. But I guess we could move on from dwelling on PTCG Live too much until a little bit later. And the first thing we're going to talk about is little regionals that happened over the weekend over in Europe. And like we mentioned earlier, Blissey almost won, but not quite, because Mew VMAX was able to take down the whole thing, which is a little bit of a surprise to me. And it was actually a pretty diverse top 8 as well. A lot of different things in there.
Yeah, definitely a diverse top 8. We had Mew winning, Blissey getting second place, and then breaking down the top 4, we had a Giratina, Palkia, and Inteleon. Neither of those, obviously, very much of a surprise. I don't think there's much in this top 8 that's a surprise, but just kind of showing that there's so many different decks that can be played in the meta right now. And then rounding out top 8, there's another Palkia, another Tina, a Arceus Giratina, which I thought was interesting, and then a Kyurem as well. So kind of a bunch of things you would expect. I think my pick for a deck that was not in top 8 at Salt Lake City that would be in top 8 in Europe was Lost Box. That did not happen. Your pick was Hisuian Zoroark. also did not happen. So we both struck out there. No one in Europe was able to come up with anything spicy either, it didn't seem like. Nothing, at least that was good enough to make top eight.
Yeah, there was a couple controls. I know James Cox played control, and I forget who else. There was two, I think there was three Mewtwo V Union controls. James's build was really weird. I saw it on stream for a little bit. It had, what's the evolution of the, oh my gosh. I remember the evolution. Meowth? I don't remember the basic. No, no, it's not a Meowth. It's the evolution is Lampent.
Yeah,
it's basic.
Litwick.
No, it's not Lampent. It's a water. It's a fish that has like the little thing off the front of its head, like a light bulb.
A lantern.
Oh no, you know it's not Lantern though. It's the other Chin one. Chin Chow.
Yeah,
Chin Chow. Yeah, there's, yes.
I know it like switches something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was like multiple of those in their deck, and I was just like, so I'm interested to see. I don't know if James posted their list at all, but that I think that's the spite. There was three Mewtwo V Unions in day two, I believe. And James's list looked pretty wild. I have no idea what the other lists look like. Unfortunately, none of them were in
trying
top
to remember
eight,
but... Pokemon names could be its own segment.
It had the I know it has the thing that reminds me. I was like, it has the thing that the fish from Finding Nemo has, the little light off the the top of its head.
I mean, that's also you know, it's a fish from nature as well, like not just a fish from Finding Nemo, but.
Well, yeah, I don't know the name of it though. That's what I know it from.
I think it's like an anglerfish or something.
That sounds familiar. That might be it. I mean, I know that's definitely a fish, an anglerfish is, but I don't know if that's...
Am I Googling anglerfish?
Yeah, look it up. But yeah, pretty diverse top eight. Yeah, what was I going to say? Yeah, the craziest decks overall. We don't have a full list of day two. We just have the top eight on Limitless right now, but nothing too ridiculous. Like I mentioned, the Europeans forgot their Drapions because Mew VMAX did win the whole thing. And I believe there was zero Drapion in top eight, except maybe in the Mew deck. That's the only one I think. Yeah, not even in the Mew deck. So none of the Tinas play Drapion. I guess Arceus Tina doesn't always play it, but usually Lawson Tina does. Neither of them played it. And I believe I saw this on Twitter. The Mew player played against Lawson Tina in top eight and top four and beat both of them. And both of them were not rocking the Drapion, which is probably the deck that plays Drapion the most usually is the Lawson Tina. Palkia sometimes plays it, not as frequently, sometimes in the Kyurem as well. But yeah, no one brought the Drapion, and it kind of feels like the Decidueye effect that people call it. Because Decidueye used to be a deck that if no one teched for it, it would literally just win in the formats that it was in. And when people teched for it, you literally just beat it. Mew is not quite to that extent. Obviously, a lot of stuff can beat Mew without Drapion, but when you're not playing Drapion, Mew's definitely a lot better and took the whole thing down.
Yeah, I mean, and especially Drapion in the Giratina deck just feels like such a good matchup for Giratina, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because you just you one hit KO one Mew with Drapion, and you one hit KO the next one with Star Requiem. And it's like, it's pretty hard to lose because you have to do nothing else the entire game except those two things.
Yeah, there's no resource management involved. You just turbo through your deck. You don't need Lost Gates. You maybe need one Lost Gate.
Yeah,
you don't
need
energies like... You just play Colras, use Comfy as much as possible, and if your Drapion's not prized, you're probably going to be in a pretty good spot. But we don't play it. The matchup gets a lot closer, and it's a lot more intricate for sure.
And it's definitely still winnable. Like, you can KO two Genesect plus one Mew, right? And maybe the players who chose not to play Drapion thought that, you know, maybe it's a 40-60 matchup without the Drapion. So, hey, if Mew's not going to be as popular, let's run with it. Which maybe for the overall tournament would have been a fine decision. But obviously, the fact that Mew ends up winning maybe would change people's minds about how it actually turned out. But yeah, congratulations to Fabio Battistella for winning this tournament. Fabio actually has no results on Limitless besides this win. So I think I saw on Twitter somewhere that they are a first-year master, which is pretty cool if that's the case. So congratulations for sure to Fabio from Italy for getting the win. And then also another player who did not have a previous record on Limitless, because I think I also read that they were a first-year master. I'm not 100% sure if that was the case as much or not. Jamie Franklin from the UK getting second place with the Blissey, which is, I would say, definitely the one that's a bit of a surprise. But it kind of makes sense. I mean, Blissey just can do sizable damage. Tank and heal just won the last regionals in Salt Lake City, right? Just in the form of Gudra. Blissey kind of is doing a similar thing most of the time. And then it also obviously has the benefit as well of just being able to ride on the back of Miltank. And sometimes you just put Miltank in play and it's really difficult for your opponent to do anything.
Yeah, no, I think Blissey's like pretty solid overall right now. It's not a deck that I've like tested a whole ton with to know if I would be like confident. But we've seen it do okay at a couple of regionals leading up to this. I believe it did okay at a couple of the American regionals. And then, yeah, I mean, top eight here, second place. So, yeah, I think it is all, like, the deck doesn't really have any, like, you're good against Palkia. The Tina matchup is the one that I'm most sketched out by for it. But Marnie and Path are both very good against Giratina. So the deck does play those. So that might just kind of be enough to get you over the Giratina hurdle. Also, like, Giratina only can one hit KO one Blissey. You do have stuff like Sableye and Cramorant to kind of soften up the other Blisseys. But
and then if they're ever playing Lost Vacuum as well,
yeah.
Right?
That's, if you don't have the Lost Vacuum,
that's kind of a card that not all of the Giratinas are playing.
Exactly, that's what I was gonna say. Like, if you don't have the Lost Vacuum or can't find it, you're gonna struggle to two hit K or one hit KO another Blissey, and then you're just like kind of milling through your energy as they're healing the damage you're kind of putting in play. So definitely seems like it could be a close one, I guess.
So yeah, congratulations to all of the top eight finishers over in Lille. The things that I wanted to talk about, kind of unique things in the list, in the winning Mew list, Fabio did play the Tool Jammer, which I think was probably the most, the thing I saw that I was like kind of the most curious about, like, okay, why exactly is this in here? And the other thing to note is the Rotom Phones over the Trekking Shoes, which I know has been a bit of a debate discussion on Twitter the last few weeks. I know like the Ohio, like Midwest crew, Andrew Mahone, Riley Holbert, JW, all those guys, Adler, are all super heavy on the team Trekking Shoes, but Rotom Phone did get the win. So I don't know if you have strong opinions one way or another, Azul, over the Rotom Phones versus Trekking Shoes. Which one you think is better?
Yeah, I don't think it's. I think Rotom Phone is just miles better than. I don't think it's much of a debate at all. There's so many less cards in this build of Mew that you want to mill through, and you have so many more hands where your hands get clunked up, and you're only being able to Genesect for like one or two. So past the initial setup, Rotom Phone, and even at initial setup, if you can Genesect for like one card, if you have a Rotom Phone versus a Trekking Shoes, that's like the difference between a VIP pass or hoping to get a VIP pass in the top two versus top five, right? So it's a little bit more extension to the VIP pass, and it's all about getting to the VIP passes on the early turns. And then in the mid game, late game, you have a ton of Genesects that are only drawing like two or like one to three cards, and Rotom Phone is going to let you dig a lot deeper than the Shoes. And like I said, a lot of times when you look at that first card off Shoes, you're like, do I really want to discard this? Because there's way less cards in this kind of build of Mew to like just want to mill through as fast as possible as there was in like the Fusion Strike build, I feel like. Sure. But definitely, I don't think it's close. I feel like anyone who plays Trekking Shoes and is like a Trekking Shoes fan has just not played the deck with Rotom Phone, because I feel like it's just miles better whenever I play the two.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've listened to JW and Riley on their podcast talk about it a decent little bit, and they were both like, there's just been so many times where you Genesect, you're trying to dig, or you're needing to just set up, and then your Rotom Phone wouldn't help you because you're done using Genesect for turn. Trekking Shoes just finds you that one more piece. I don't know if maybe that's them being a little bit results-based in their theory.
It was
versus
a little confirmation bias.
Right. Which results-based, I mean, obviously, like, just because something works out for you doesn't mean it is always correct, right? Like,
yeah.
Just because a matchup is 80-20 doesn't mean that you're going to lose it every time. You're going to win it 20% of the time, right? It's kind of a similar thing. Even if Trekking Shoes is going to be better one out of five times, just because that one time happened doesn't mean that it was correct, right?
Yeah, exactly. It might be closer than I think it is, but it just feels – Rotom Phone just feels better, so I always like – I'm very much – it's either something's good or it's bad. I'm very much just no really in between, because technically it is either correct to play Rotom Phone or Trekking Shoes. I guess you could be correct to play like a 2-2 split, but I feel like Rotom Phone has always just felt smoother. Everything just kind of makes like everything past maybe the turn one is just smoother with Rotom Phone. But even then, like I said, if you can at least Genesect for one, that's usually better to combo with a Rotom Phone than a Trekking Shoes.
So the other interesting card to me as well was the Tool Jammer, which I mentioned, and I can't really think of a great reason for it, like Big Charm and Palkia, but even then, Choice Belt does the exact same thing, right? Yeah. It does, coincidentally, which worked out great for Fabio. It works great against Blissey, so maybe it was the tech for the Blissey matchup, turning
Fabio's
off the giant capes, or the capes of
Fabio's toughness. Fabio's a time traveler, knew that they would be up against Blissey in the finals. So if they wanted to win, they had to put the, because that is a pretty big difference. That's basically a double choice belt, double power tablet. Double the way modifier. The math lines up in that, yeah, the way the math lines up in that matchup, it's like a double modifier. So definitely, yeah, very good against Blissey, and it worked out for them. I'm sure they utilize it in the matchup. But yeah, besides that, I guess the biggest thing that I conclusion I came to is it's good against Air Balloon. Air Balloon's really, really strong in these Lost Zone decks if it's found early, and you don't really want to go KO your opponent's Comfy that has the Air Balloon. But if you shut it down by knocking out their active Giratina, and then when they send up the Comfy, they don't just get to move it right back to the bench. That does to me seem like that would have a decent amount of value, I guess, overall. But yeah, it doesn't seem like it's like that powerful of a card. Definitely seems like definitely could be a little bit flexible if you wanted to cut it for sure.
And then I wanted to talk a little bit about the two Giratina lists. I don't think there was anything super crazy from either of them. We've got two lists here, one from a player called Lucas from Brazil, and then Nico Alabas from Germany as well. Nico did play the 2-3 Giratina V-Star line with the Thornton, which is something I think people were really hype on Thornton when the set first came out in Giratina specifically. And this was kind of a common line in online tournaments, a 2-3 Giratina with the 1 Thornton. Really seems like it has fallen out of favor, but Nico decided to run with it and obviously ended up doing pretty well. He did play the 1 Snorlax as well. You got any strong opinions on the Thornton plays, Azul?
I think you need to either play 3 Giratina or play Thornton. I think that I have a strong opinion on.
Sure.
But I don't know if Thornton gives you enough flexibility to make you want to run it, because Colrus is just so powerful. And then, yeah, Colrus is just so powerful, to be honest. It feels just, I think the thing about Thornton is just like, it feels awkward to when you want to actually use the card.
I mean, I think it's obvious that it's like for very late, right? And it's like, yeah, you definitely can get to a time in this deck where you don't want to Colrus, right? You're just going to see too many cards at the end of the game after you've got 14 cards in the Lost Zone already. And then that's where Thornton, and as I guess a benefit to it as well in a regional championships compared to an online tournament is that people don't know you have it, right? And that is something you see very consistently from the top level players, is having cards that they can surprise their opponents with, right? Not playing just the standard cookie cutter list, being able to have something that'll catch someone off guard, because that allows you to make plays and will surely win you games throughout your tournament run.
It is true, yeah. And it does allow you to play with a board state of just, like, single prizers and then make a Giratina out of nowhere. Yes. Like, so you can, like, you Sableye and set up a bunch of things to get knocked out, and then your opponent only draws one prize card on their turn because you have no two prizes in play. And you're like, haha, Thornton and Mirage Gate evolve, knockout. But the question becomes, how often do those situations come up where you need it? And then how often can you actually even do that, right? So really cool plays to be made with it. How often is the cool plays worth not just playing a third Giratina V? Because if you prize a Giratina V and then you can only put one down and then your opponent KOs it, you're locked in on Thornton to get a Giratina set up again. So that's like kind of the scary part, I feel like, for sure. It's harder to get down the double Giratina board state where you can be like, I'm going to be like the aggressor and be able to trade back and forth aggressively. So you
kind of maybe that, where the Snorlax comes in. Nico did play the 1 Snorlax as another optional attacker, something that can hit pretty hard. Even if you didn't have another Giratina, potentially. Snorlax is just a solid card, to be honest. So, but Nico, I think, was the only person playing it. The other thing I wanted to mention as well between these two lists is there's two different stadiums, and there's kind of a few different stadiums that we see from people. Lucas was playing the Collapsed Stadium, which I think got pretty popular in online events leading up to Salt Lake City. I believe Nick Moffitt was playing it, correct, in the top 4 list in Salt Lake, I'm pretty sure. So Collapse Stadium is something that we've seen a bit from the Tinas. But Nico was playing the Temple of Sinnoh, which we also saw a little bit from players in Salt Lake City. Mainly here as a counter to the Wash Energy in Kyurem, I think. So you can still one hit KO through that. But everyone pretty consistently seems like is going with just one stadium card. And they're bouncing around. I've also seen Training Court in some lists, which can be pretty beneficial to reuse Radiant Greninja. Also just get an extra energy in play. But I don't know. What do you think? Is there three different stadiums to play? Do you only play one? Do you bounce between these three? What's the move?
I mean, I think you just don't play Training Court because I feel like everyone's going to the heavy capture build. So you just have enough energy, right? Like you're playing like Nico. Another difference, I guess, Nico brought the Recycler, which is like an initial inclusion in most Giratina lists. And then I feel like people went to the double Ordinary Rod. So you have like double Rod or Recycler plus Rod plus 13 to 14 energy. We saw I think, yeah, Nick played 14 energy in their list. I believe Nico's playing 13. And then this other list here is playing 13 as well, you know, heavy on the captures. So I think there is no reason for the training court. Collapsed allows you to, I feel like it's really good to help you control your bench. But Sinnoh, I feel like, is the more value stadium. Because they both, I guess they both.
Collapsed is pretty good against Palkia.
Is it that good, though? Because they're just going to replace the stadium, and you have one stadium, and they're, like, not being aggressive with their stadiums.
I mean, it's pretty good if you can combo it with, like, a Roxanne play and have your bench to be pretty low as well.
I guess.
But you definitely have to, like, kind of play to it. I guess it's kind of the question of, like, how much value do you get from it in other matchups? I mean, healing or getting rid of a damaged Giratina or getting rid of a Luminion V is not a non-viable bonus, right? So those are both like decent things that you can do, which would be also other pros for Collapse Stadium. But Temple of Sinnoh, I mean, Kyurem has been insanely popular at both American Regionals. I think it was still, again, very popular here in Lille. So Temple of Sinnoh seems like a solid play.
Yeah, there were quite a few good players. I think there was a couple in top 16. There's quite a few decent players playing the Kyurem who did not make top 8. Yeah, it definitely seemed like it was maybe the second most popular deck again, which is a surprise to me. But yeah, I feel like I like Sinnoh a little bit better. I guess the argument for Collapse could also be it's good against Regis, but if like it doesn't feel like it's even that good against Regis because like they're just going to counter your stadium next turn, it feels like. Like if you're using Roxanne plus stadium, that means you're attacking into their gift energy. And if you're using Boss plus stadium, that means they're keeping their hand. So they probably are going to get a counter stadium. So the Sinnoh's like proactive usage, getting the value out of it immediately to get like a KO on a Kyurem feels better than the Collapse. And like I said, training court feels pretty mid right now. It doesn't seem very good.
So we also did see the one other version of Giratina in top 8, the Arceus Giratina. We talked about this just a little bit last week. I think we were both kind of, if it comes to playing Giratina, more fans of playing the Lost Box version. But when it comes to playing Arceus, is this now just probably the best way to play Arceus is with the Giratina?
I guess. I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's any great ways to play Arceus. We saw Flying Pikachu.
I guess Gudra maybe, but...
Yeah. There was I didn't see anything about Gudra at all at this tournament.
That's true.
So maybe the Europeans not big Gudra fans. I called them out as not being big Reggie fans as well last week, I believe. But Reggie was number one seed going into day two. I think they maybe ended top 16. I don't know how many other Reggies there were, but I guess it maybe is. Arceus doesn't feel that great right now. The reason I don't think this deck is very good is because I feel like it's definitely unfavored against the Lost Zone Tina deck, which is pretty much established as a tier one deck, if not tier two, but it was probably the most popular deck. It seemed like it was the most popular deck at this tournament was Lost Zone Tina. I mean, you had people like Stefan playing it. It was on stream for two or three rounds of the rounds I've watched so far of the tournament. So you're having a bad matchup against one of the best decks and in the top two most popular decks, that's where I usually say just pack it and it's not worth running. So, and that's Arceus's biggest struggle right now, I think, in general, is its Lost Zone Tina matchup. And Arctina is no different.
I mean, I think that good examples of the problems with it that I've seen at least were in Cyrus Davis's streamed game in Salt Lake on day one. Now, they were still able to win the game that they were on stream with it, but I just remember watching. I wasn't casting that round, but I was on like the admin role, so like putting the cards up on the screen and stuff. And so I was watching the game, and they got off to a super quick lead, had a bunch of energies in play, and then the opponent just played a Marnie, and they drew like a really clunky hand, weren't able to get Bibarel in play, and almost lost the game. They were just barely able to squeak back in. I mean, played it pretty well, but it was like one top deck away from just losing a like 6-1 comeback type situation. And I think that's just kind of, you know, it feels like the more clunky... of all the Arceus Bibarel decks is definitely the clunkiest one and most difficult. The power level is very high quickly, but like you just run out of steam really quick, it feels like. I mean, because you're lost zoning all your energies.
Yeah, the deck is extremely awkward if you don't get like two Trinity Novas off. You get one Trinity Nova off, you don't find double turbos after that. Like, what do? You just kind of lose. I feel like the deck should maybe like play double Raihan or something so you can more easily like set up your following Tina or go like Raihan after they KO your Arceus or something. Because like the deck like does succumb to a lack of resources after that first Trinity Nova happens. You just like, you attack with your first Tina, and then if they just like KO your fresh Tina off the bench or something, if you had two set up, you have no energy in play, and then the game just kind of crumbles from there. So definitely a it's definitely an okay in deck in the format. Tier three probably right now. I'm not a huge fan, like I said, just because of the matchup against the Lost Zone Tina is just really rough. It is cool to see some build of Arceus still out there and decently viable, I guess, but it definitely struggles.
And then the last thing to mention would be the pair of Palkia and Tellians in top eight, one in top eight, one in top four. Two really good players, Fabian Pujol and Owen Kammerman. And Owen Kammerman off to like an insane start to the season as well. I looked at the Limitless page. Starting back in May, top eight at Lille Regionals, top 64 at Bremen Regionals, and then at Worlds, top 32, very good finish, obviously. London Open, first place. Special event in Bilbao, fourth place. Regionals in Lille, fourth place. I believe they're number one on the leaderboard right now. So shout out to Owen on an insane start to the season, without a doubt.
Yeah, I've always taken note of the, and their twin brother, I want to say, also is a place, or is also a very good player. But I mean, I've always seen their names. You know, I've always taken note of wherever they place in tournaments because their names are always popping up. And it seems like this is definitely Owen's year so far, for sure. Like, I've seen them in the past years, their names are always popping up in high results, but Owen's been absolutely killing it so far. And hopefully they can maintain this insane run so far.
So Fabian was on kind of a more interesting list, I would say, really similar to what we've seen out of Japanese Intellian lists back whenever Intellian or Palkia Intellian first, I kept saying Intellian lists, Palkia Intellian lists, from whenever Palkia first came out. We got the one capture energy, the rare candy, the quick shooting Intellian, double Melanie. So definitely some kind of interesting inclusions here. Also, Fabian on the two copies of Lost City as well.
It's a Reggie hater right there. also very good against a lot of, also very good against Sable's art as well. The Lost Cities have pretty good value in that matchup as well. I feel like if you set up and you have the double Lost City, you kind of just beat Sable's Zard, because the deck kind of struggles to... If you set up well as Palkia, the deck struggles to win the game without using Charizard twice. So if you just get the Lost City and Lost on their Zard, they just lose. And you also, you know, get the free win against Reggie most of the time with the double Lost City. I would imagine that seems pretty good against Reggie to have two Lost Cities. So going with like the heavy quick ball... Only one capture energy kind of surprised me once I saw there was only one Battle VIP pass. I thought there would be a little bit heavier capture energies in here, but...
And I think that's why we see like the four quick ball plus the Crobat, right? Yeah. Just a little bit more reach on those turn ones going first or mid game as well. It can be nice. It has definitely the one VIP pass, also definitely a very key thing to mention.
Yeah, and has the rare candy in there, which I really like going up against the Lost Zone decks, because Sableye can be such a pain in like the early mid game, where they can just like kind of sweep your board of Sobbles because you weren't able to evolve them fast enough. So the rare candy really helps you like get value out of your Sobbles, out of your Shady Dealings before it's kind of too gone, or even like candy out of quick shooting to kind of get that in play established. And also, I guess like another thing for Palkia, which is like something that a lot of people were like, you just don't want to open Palkia like ever, which is kind of true, right? If you go first, it's okay, but you don't need to open it. And if you go second, you'd rather open Sobble and keep calling. Right.
And if you go second and open Palkia and it just dies turn two, you're screwed. Like, that's minus two prizes right away.
Yeah. So it was more so like not the fact that you don't really, it's not that you don't want to play for Palkia, because that is just kind of good. And we say there's no heavy ball in here from Fabian as well, which is a little bit scary because prizing Greninja sucks.
Or Manaphy.
And prizing Manaphy. Yeah. Even prizing Manaphy is pretty scary. It's less scary in the mirror match, I feel like, but it's really scary up against Giratina if you prize your Manaphy. So the lack of heavy ball is interesting, especially with four Palkia, four Sobble. It almost feels like that heavy ball just kind of becomes like a fifth quick ball, which is pretty value. Like, if you could play five quick ball, I'm pretty sure most decks would play five quick ball if they could, right? So when you're playing that many basic Pokemon that you want, there's a good chance one of them is prized. The heavy ball kind of becomes a fifth quick ball. So even though you have like less need for the heavy ball to be able to actually make sure you can win games, because now if you prize a Palkia, you still have three Palkia, it is like an efficient way to get, you know, set up still. So no heavy ball seems a little bit scary, but I like that this list is also seems to be viable, because the four Battle VIP, I just hate playing Battle VIP pass sucks. I hate that card. I hate playing that card. So if I was ever to pick up a Palkia deck to try Palkia again, I would definitely pick up something like this and see if this feels comfortable, because I just want to play Battle VIP Pass as little as I can.
Well, and speaking of which, Owen did play the much more normal list of what we're used to seeing in the Western end of the world, the four Battle VIP Pass. The big, I think, surprise or like thing to note is definitely the Crabominable V, a tech we've seen pop up. James Cox got top four at Worlds with it, you know, something we've seen here and there in the Palkias. Seemed like a decent inclusion this weekend, with Gudra winning the last tournament, I think has to be the main reason that this goes in there. But Trigger or Avalanche can also always just get in there and mill some cards, right?
Yeah, against Lost Zone decks, the Trigger Avalanche like actually is kind of a scary threat. But maybe just Owen knew people were going to show up with the Mewtwo V, because that's the original reason it was played in Palkia, was for the Mewtwo V Union matchup. Maybe Owen just knew that there was going to be three of them in day two. The Europeans are going to bring Mewtwo V Union. So I was like, all right, I'll run the Crabominable. Why not? but yeah, probably for Gudra. And then, yeah, the Avalanche is just kind of scary. Like, even like if you open Crabominable against a Lost Zone deck and go second, just like start avalanching them, it's actually kind of trolly. That's always a fun thing you can do, because they really hate getting any other cards discarded that they have no control over, because they already have to deal with their own flower selecting and choruses to begin with.
Just send up Crab and be annoying, and they can't deal with it super quickly as well, right? They got a 2-8 KO with Cramorant, so you could get four Trigger Avalanches in before they can really do much.
Yeah, mill four cards drastic happens. Yeah,
two Trigger Avalanches.
Yeah, but probably a little bit better in the late game against them. But if you open it, it's not the worst thing. It's not the worst thing if you were to open it. Just like the reason you don't want to play it.
I mean, this thing's a fatty though. If you open Crabominable, that's a feels bad. Four Retreat. That guy is not getting out of there anytime soon.
Yeah, you got the cross switchers, but that's a pretty big commitment to you have to turn two double cross switcher to be able to move it around and set up another attacker. So it's not fun when you open the Crab, for sure.
I mean, that's the results there from the Lille Regional Championships. Big congrats to all of the finishers. And speaking of regional championships, something else we did want to talk about a little bit is post-event surveys have been going out to players after these tournaments. At least in the U.S., I'm sure they're probably going out in the other parts of the world as well, though. But yeah, I mean, I've not been to any regional as a player. So Azul, do you want to kind of share what these surveys have looked like, or kind of, you know, what the emails have looked like that you've gotten them in?
Yeah, so they've been sending out these emails, and these emails actually initially, so I haven't actually done any of them, which I probably should have done, you know, especially leading up to this podcast. It probably would have been good for me to have a little bit of insight on what actually goes into them. But
all right,
the main thing I wanted to bring up,
survey with Azul GG on the podcast right now.
Hey, and I did find my email for one of them, so I could walk through it right now. What I did want to say is these are coming from TPCI, which is, I definitely think, is a little bit different. So I initially thought these were coming from the TOs, right, which would make sense as well, but they are coming from TPCI, so I think this is a good thing. And it might just not be so much, you know, in my mind it's a little bit of, well, this means, you know, if you have a problem with a regional, you know, going to the TO is going to be a little bit less effective than going to TPCI, right? And I'm not saying we should go to these surveys and trash every regional if you hate it, but if you do have some gripes with it, taking one of these surveys is probably the best way to make sure some kind of feedback gets back to, you know, the TOs in kind of a more mass and hopefully constructive way, right? Sure. So definitely, I would say take your time. I'm going to myself. I was a little bit less enthusiastic about doing it when I saw the email, because I thought it was coming from the TO, so I was a little bit less I felt less interested in wanting to do it. But now that I know it's from TPCI, I'm definitely a little bit more motivated to want to give that feedback. I recommend everyone else, you know, if you got the emails, to go ahead and do it yourself, get the feedback in there. Well, especially if you liked it, didn't like it, doesn't matter, you know, give your feedback, and hopefully anything that needs to be changed or can be, you know, pass it off constructively to the TOs can be passed on.
Yeah, I think Pokemon's just trying to glean any information that they can as to what's working, what's not working, what could be improved upon. And I don't think it's all necessarily in the mindset of like identifying every single issue. It's more just kind of like just trying to figure out maybe where any small holes are in the process right now, what things could be done better. I mean, this is a great place probably to talk about, you know, I don't know exactly what the survey looks like. Like I said, I've not gotten one because I haven't participated in any regionals, but I mean, if there's opportunities to
I haven't
talk
looked at
about,
them either.
If there's opportunities to talk about, you know, entry fees, if there's opportunities to talk about getting your products, like the playmats, the promos and stuff like that, locations, or like good things like, you know, tournaments that run really efficiently, like opportunities to highlight what you've enjoyed the most, side events that you really liked. I know that at NAIC, I played in a GLC side event, and they had some surveys out there where they were asking people about, like, you know, hey, what side event did you play, and which tournaments, or would you, like, buy products for this format, and stuff like that. So I think that they're really trying to gather a lot of information, and then from there, move forward accordingly as they see fit. So, I mean, I always, you know, think that it's good when you're passionate about something to provide information, provide feedback, because that's where it can be made better, right?
Yeah, we can hope so. We can hope it gets made better for sure.
And speaking of feedback, feedback that was provided by players has been taken into account when it comes to the Pokemon TCG Live, or so we hope. So the TCG Live devs sent out a letter to the community. This was a couple weeks ago. We didn't have time to talk about it on last week's episode. It was actually 2 weeks ago that this kind of came out, but we did want to talk about it at some point because we've talked about TCG Live pretty extensively on the cast, so we want to keep things updated and keep talking about it as things come up and new information comes out. A lot more countries recently, by the way, have gotten access to the beta, which I think is good. You know, I would encourage people to play the beta. Don't transfer your account from TCGO over to TCG Live, but definitely give the beta a try. And, you know, maybe there's opportunity for you to, once again, give your feedback. But yeah, I'm just going to go through, read this letter to the community. We'll go paragraph by paragraph, and then Azul and I will kind of break down, give our thoughts on where things are at. So let's do it. Letter to the community. Dear Pokemon TCG fans, today we are excited to share more about the updates and changes coming this year to Pokemon TCG Live. In August, we shared a survey with everyone who played Pokemon TCG Live Limited Beta to help us in our ongoing efforts to better understand player impressions of the game's current state. So we talked about these surveys when they went out. Azul and I both got one. I did it. Did you do it as well? Maybe.
Yeah, I submitted them.
So I think we were both pretty honest in it. Oh yeah, I remember you talking about how you were like kind of brutal in your survey as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, it was a lot of negative things to say, but yeah, definitely. I mean, you should always be honest in those things like that as well, the surveys and stuff. But yeah, unfortunately, it was a lot of negativity. But
so, and this is sharing here what they got from that survey. So today, we'd like to provide some insight into some of the common themes that you shared with us as part of that survey. Players liked crafting, daily quests, and battle pass content. Players found the gameplay to be strategic and clear. Players found matchmaking was too slow, and some players experienced numerous bugs. Players disliked the pace of receiving progression rewards, and the difficulty of finding cards in their collection. Players disliked the art style, including elements like avatars, board design, and overall UI layout. Anything there, Azul, that you disagree with? Or are you kind of on board with the overall findings of that?
No, I think that is pretty reasonable. I guess the one thing they didn't mention was the pace of gameplay. It's the I think we talked about it. We maybe talked about this in the when we talked about the survey, but the found the gameplay to be strategic and clear, which I don't know what that means because they're not making the game. They are just simply making you be able to play the game in a digital form. So like, why do they care if people enjoy playing the Pokemon TCG? They have no control over if we enjoy it or don't, because like depending on what they make as far as the cards go in Japan is what they have to code into PTCG Live. One thing they didn't mention here was that the gameplay is definitely too slow. Like the pace of play, it was like hard. It was took long. If you took the same amount of actions in the same game and played it in PTCGO and then played it in PTCG Live, it was slower on PTCG Live, which is appalling because PTCGO already has its own problems where pace of play is just like too slow. And it was slower on PTCG Live. Apparently that's fixed in this most recent update by quite a bit, but it's from what I've heard, they basically just like took the animation speed and like cranked it to times three. So I don't know if it's just like really jarring and fast or if it's actually like looks like better animations. I haven't actually seen it myself, but that's what someone told me. It basically is what happened.
Yeah, I have seen some Twitter videos of that where I have also not played it myself quite yet. But I've seen some videos where their answer to people feeling like the pace of the game was slow is just cranking it to 11, right? Like just turn it up and just go faster, which is like, it kind of works, right? Like you get to get through the game faster, which is a win, but it just makes, like you said, maybe it's just a little too jarring. The Twitter videos I saw, it kind of just looked a little ridiculous, to be honest.
Yeah, like, I haven't seen all of it yet, but that was... They're addressing the problems, right? They're addressing the problems.
We'd like to thank everyone who took the time to share their thoughts with us. They are critical to the development of Pokemon TCG Live. We've identified and prioritized all the issues described, and your feedback helps us continue adjusting and iterating on the many ways we can optimize the experience for all players. With today's updates, the visuals and the board layout changes previewed in our last letter are now live. With this new design in place, we're excited to show off some new visualizations that will be that will use the background to display various energy types when Pokemon are played. These animations will replace the existing ones currently in-game, with plans to add more background effects in future updates. Here are just a few of the new animations we're looking to implement before the end of the year. There's a short little 9-second video here just showing a couple different animations for, theoretically, when you attach a different type of energy or maybe play a certain type of Pokemon that, you know, interacts with the board. And I think that's great. I think that's something that should have been in the game from the start, but I'm glad that it is being added now because just, I mean, especially after playing Marvel Snap, which I talked about at the beginning of the podcast this week, just like, any little extra thing where it feels like your card is just doing something makes it feel so much better to play a digital card game.
Yeah, like the visual things.
Instead
like
of just dragging and dropping, you know?
Yeah. Like... But it has to be done smoothly. I don't want to be locked out of playing a card for 10 seconds while an animation happens. The animation should happen simultaneously of me being able to play the game, right? So there has to be like a balance to it, a flow to it for sure, which is what we've been lacking.
Touching on the pacing of progression rewards noted in the survey results, our internal data review showed that most players used rewards to craft competitive decks before receiving those same cards in the battle pass. As a result, we changed the battle pass so you can earn more in-game currency and receive those cards in earlier tiers. Because of these changes, you no longer have to wait as long to earn powerful cards to complete your decks and can enjoy a more diverse crafting experience as you experiment with the deck building. So pretty much people were using their credits to craft cards they were going to get in the battle pass later on, but it just takes a little while to get through the battle pass. So they kind of just moved that up, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. And I hate so one of the things that I've heard people like argue that they're not going to make it too easy to get cards in PTCG Live is that, because if they make it hard to get cards in PTCG Live, then people will go get codes, which will then increase the sales of Pokemon cards. So it's not truly, they're not truly trying to make PTCG Live free to play, which I've seen too many times throughout PTCG Live's release. But that is just like not true. That is not what's going to happen ever, because anyone who, once PTCG Live drops and everyone has to go over to it and people need cards, they're going to go to code sites to get a bunch of codes to get enough credits to build the decks they want, and that'll have zero impact on people buying more Pokemon products. If anything, it
it's the same thing that happens right now. Same thing that happens right now with
Which has zero impact on stores and people trying to get product from distributors. Everyone's trying to max the amount of Pokemon cards they can get. Pokemon is still a super hot commodity that everyone wants as much as they can possibly get of, and people wanting codes. No one's going to want more codes once PTCG Live drops. Maybe there'll be an initial spike when PTCG Live initially drops, but after that, it's going to be, you know, a downwards trend from where it's been at with PTCGO. You need way more codes for PTCGO than you'll ever need for PTCG Live.
I would love to see the numbers of PTCGO codes that are created versus redeemed. Like, how many codes get made that just get opened by kids who don't play the game and they just get thrown away because they don't care about it, right? Or people who, like, you know, adult collectors who don't care about it. You know, some of them, some people keep them to the side and sell them, and some people will, you know, if anyone opens it on YouTube or stream or anything like that, they usually give them away if they don't care about them, right? But, I mean, there's not an insignificant percentage of people who probably just, like, toss those things.
Yeah, yeah, just into the void.
So, all like, it's just not gonna ever, like, PTCGO codes being necessary for the game is not going to impact physical card sales. I mean, and if it does, it'll be a very small amount. Like, sure, yeah, I mean, maybe some people out there, when, you know, like, example, they just came out with the Palkia V-Star Premium Collection, right? If maybe you've never played Palkia and you wanted to play it, you could go pick up three of those boxes, you can build the deck, you can throw the codes online, you've got all the stuff to start playing the deck, right? So maybe, you know, if there's 1,000 people who want to play Palkia, probably like 2 of those 1,000 people will go spend the $120, maybe more than that, but like a small percentage of people will go spend their money. So it's like really
very small. Most people are going to the code site to get the Palkia code, right? Like they'll just go get the Palkia code from a code site.
Yeah, some people will just go get the Palkia code. Some people will just use their saved up credits, right? And some people will, a much, much smaller portion will actually go out and buy the product. And then those people might have just gone and bought it anyway because they wanted to build their Palkia deck.
Yeah, I just heard too many people talk about how like this is like a way for Pokemon to increase their distributor sales to get, because people are going to be buying like more codes or whatever, which is just like, that's not what's going to happen. It's not true. It's not going to be an impact. All right, finish the letter real fast. I got to let the cat out of the room.
Okay. As development on the limited beta progresses, we've continued to add more regions to help pave the way for the infrastructure to support our players globally. We're excited to continue learning from our community as we roll out to more regions in the next few weeks, with the goal of rolling out the limited beta worldwide by the end of the year. So I'm pretty sure the beta is available to like most of Europe at this point, not all of Europe. I don't think UK has access yet. I don't remember exactly though. I'm going to look it up real quick, but yeah, I mean, it sounds like the plan is going to be for it to be here by the end of the year, you know, in the US and in the rest of the world as well.
In the beta form. I do wonder how long it'll take to get the full release of the game. It seems like it could be like end of next year, even possibly. If it goes past that, that'd be pretty ridiculous, I feel like. But it does seem they are trying to make improvements. Now, one thing I did want to kind of talk about, and I don't know, and I don't want to say this as like it's a bad thing. It just feels really weird. Because it effectively feels like the Pokemon TCG community almost effectively works for TPCI in trying to make PTCG Live a reasonable product. Because the amount of feedback it's taken for us and pushback we've had to push back to make the game improved, and the amount of things they've actually kind of pulled back on from our pushback is ridiculous when I've thought about any other beta in a game. I like even playing in the Halo Infinite beta last year, there's obviously some things wrong with the game. There's still things people don't like about the game right now, but they're not making drastic changes because the community doesn't like some of the stuff, right? But the changes that TPCI has made in PTCG Live is like huge when you kind of think about like any other, like Pokemon is a big brand. When you think about any other big brand game, No developers of any other big brand game are allowing their community to make as drastic of changes as TPCI is making to PTCG Live. So, like I said, it just feels weird. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's a good thing they're listening to the community, right? Like, I think we can all agree that's a good thing. But to an extent, it feels weird that it feels like we effectively work for TPCI as, like a testers or whatever, beta testers or whatever, to be able to actually be able to have them actually put out a decent product because of how many things they've like kind of agreed are bad and like changed, right? And it almost feels like, is there no good creativity in their team? And are we going to have to like basically make the game for them every step of the way, even after release? Like everything they come out with, is it just going to be, no, this is bad, you should change this, and then they're going to change it, and it's going to go on repeat for the rest of the game's existence. And another thing I want to talk about, like, the people who are developing PTCG Live, they're not doing anything new. Everything that's in the game, they simply have to put in the game. They're not creating anything, right? Like, the cards are created and the interactions of the cards are created by the developers or by the people who make the cards, creatures in Japan, right? The things they put into the game, like the currencies, crafting, the battle pass, we'll talk about lack of ranked ladder in just a second. none of that is new. They just have to put it in a Pokemon form, the Pokemon trading card game form, right? So they're not actually doing anything new, right? So I don't know. It just feels weird to me that everything they've done, tried to do themselves, has been pretty bad for the most part. And then the pushback from the community has led it to be most of it been changed, which is like, it just feels weird. That's the best thing I can say. I'm not saying it's definitely a bad thing. It's good to listen to the community, but it definitely feels weird having been part of, you know, many betas of different games throughout the years.
I wanted to, you talking about this made me remember this tweet that I saw from a friend of mine and a judge in Pokemon and also like a local TO to the Carolinas area, Dylan Bussert, who actually as Day, I think, works as a programmer in some capacity.
Where's my paycheck is what I'm wondering.
What's that?
Where's my paycheck? If I'm working for him, I want to be paid.
Sure. Dylan tweeted a couple of things that I thought were pretty interesting in just regards to this. All the way back in July, he said, I have a theory that TPCI struggles with in-house software development, TCG Live, PEM, which is going to be the new tournament software, which apparently has been in a complete mess. We'll talk about that at some point, I'm sure. The tournament software that's going to replace Tom for local tournaments is apparently just like terrible.
I hadn't heard it. I heard about that a long time ago, I feel like someone mentioned that to me a long time ago.
We'll talk about it in a future episode, I think. But yeah, it's apparently not in a good spot right now, but which is very concerning for maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's why Cups and Challenges aren't back yet, because they're trying to fix this thing. But
they need to ask Daddy Nintendo for a nice paycheck and be like, listen, we can't do these things in-house.
Bro, they don't need it from millies. Nintendo. They have it, man. They have it.
No, TPCI isn't Pokemon or Nintendo, though,
know,
right?
But they've got the bread, bro. They have it. I don't know if they do.
Okay, if they do, then it's on them to do it. But let's just say maybe they don't. They just need to be like, yo, Daddy Peek, yo, hook me up a little bit here.
Okay, anyway, back to this. So I have a theory that TPCI struggles with in-house software development because employees and families are not allowed to compete in official Pokemon events. How can a dev make a great software for a card game they don't live and breathe? So people who work at Pokemon are not allowed to compete at Pokemon tournaments. It's like something you agree to when you sign up. And then also something else Dylan said in a response to Robin's article on TCG Live and the problems with the beta, which is a good article I'd recommend anyone read. Yeah. Dylan says, this paragraph really jumped out. The people making TPCI software do not appear to actually play the TCG. And the paragraph in reference from Robin's article says, the most striking issue for me is the lack of a full deck view. We all know that TCG players love to lay their deck out and look at it, especially when in the process of deck building. Not only that, content creators need this option when wanting to present a deck to their audience. The lack of this option almost makes me question whether the PTCGL team includes anyone that actually plays a card game in their free time. Which, I mean, is so true because every single card game player loves to look at their deck. And like me, and I imagine you especially as well, in the process of building a deck, will constantly on PTCGO go to the full screen mode, kind of take stock of where I'm at. You know, how many of these search cards do I have? So on and so forth. Where do I need to add? Go back in, add some stuff. Full deck view once again. And the fact that it's not there maybe just does lean into that theory that no one is playing the game, man. No one's playing the card game.
Yeah, maybe it's just a bunch of smart kids who, you know, came out of college and they wanted to be programmers and make video games or whatever. And this is like the first opportunity they got and they just kind of took it, and Pokemon was looking for smart people, but it also has to be smart people who have the passion behind, you know, doing, I think maybe this is a little bit separated, different from like, I don't know. It does feel that way. And like I said, it feels like the community, if we're basically employees at this point, our opinions have a direct impact, a very big, like I said, I've never seen anything like this in a beta or a video game in development where the community has such a big impact on things that are being changed in a game. It's really slow for things to change. And then on top of that, yeah, there's so many things that are still missing. I didn't even think about that, but Robin makes a great point with that one. Like, not having a full deck view does kind of suck. And like, thinking back to when I did do a couple YouTube videos on decks in PTCG Live, like, you had to click through the three little sections or whatever. There was no full deck view. I don't know. It feels weird. And like I said, they're not doing anything new. So like, what is, I don't get what the problem is with not having this happen faster. Like I said, they're not developing the cards and the interactions. That's being done by creatures, and they give them the cards. They just have to put the cards in digital form. They did not invent a battle pass. They did not invent ranked play. They did not invent crafting. None of these things. They're just making everything in a digital form. They're either copying something or taking the actual card game and putting it in digital form. They're not doing anything new, but everything seems like such a headache to progress, and there's nothing new or innovative that isn't bad in PTCG Live when you compare it to what it could be or anything else that's kind of out there in the space.
And speaking of the ranked ladder, I know that's something you wanted to talk about a little bit this week, because it's something that they talked about in the initial preview.
They hyped it up
for TCG Live, is that there would be a ranked ladder, which is something that the Pokemon TCG online community has asked for years, an opportunity for you to see exactly where you stack up against the rest of the players in the world. Every other Pokemon game has some decent form of this. But what TCG Live delivered when the beta came out is not a true ranked ladder.
Yeah. And I made a tweet a couple weeks ago, and I got into some pretty, I don't want to say heated, but lively debates with a couple people about it. One of the big things is that they advertise. One of their selling points, because the community wants a ranked ladder. And that was actually one of the biggest talking points, I feel like, leading up to their initial release video, was people were just kind of asking for a ranked ladder. People were like, we need a new client. Can we at least get a ranked ladder? That feels like the two biggest things. And they kind of baited us with like, oh, ranked ladder, right? In the preview video, right? And everyone got super excited for it. Or there was some preview of ranked ladder. Some way they told us there was going to be a ranked ladder, right? And I was like, oh, shoot, that's super hype, right? That's insane. But what they gave us is not a ranked ladder. It is a progression. I don't even know what you call it. It's like tracker. a progression tracker. But there's no way to compare yourself. The point of a ranked ladder is it and competition. The point of a ranked ladder is that it's competitive. And the only way you can be competitive is if you can compare yourself to other people, other players of the same thing you're doing, and see how you stack up to the rest of the competition. But there's no way to do that with their current rank system. And even if there was, like, even if you could become number one in their current rank system, it's flawed in the sense that it's very simplistic in, you know, once you get to the final stage, the Mewtwo tier or whatever, when you win a game, you get 10 points. When you lose a game, you lose 10 points, which is a super simplistic and basic or like baseline ELO system, right? Like, it's still kind of an ELO system. Is it even? I don't even know. But no. Like, you are gaining for winning, losing for losing, but it's 10 for 10. Like, there's no, it should be based on who you play against or some other form of ranking system. But everything, I think, like, when you look at any other game, it always breaks down to some kind of ELO system. And one of the examples I made in one of the discussions on my tweet was like, if you look at any, like, the two, I would say probably all of the top video games in the world, to some extent, have a ranked system, and that's what keeps players playing for the most part, right? If it's not one of the other, like, kind of more fun modes in the game or something. But like, you look at League of Legends and Valorant and CSGO, the thing that keeps players wanting to play those games is you come and you play the ranked ladder. I'm pretty sure, like, the majority, which is usually not true for most games, the majority of the player base in Valorant plays ranked. Like, that's usually not true for any of the games. Like, if you look at League of Legends or even like Hearthstone, probably the majority of the player base is in, for like Hearthstone, is in the other game modes or like casual. And then if you looked at League of Legends, probably the majority of the base is in ARAM and normals. But when you look at like Valorant, like, the number one thing I think is like the ranked mode, right? Everyone, it's a thing that like kind of just like is a, there's so many people who want it. And I feel like it really like drives people to want to return to the game, because you actually have something to play for. Sure, when a new set drops, everyone wants to come try out the new decks. But then after that happens, people are going to get bored and not going to want to play as much. But when you have the new decks and you can compete and try and become rank one, or if you just give like little rewards for being top 1,000 and then top 100 and then top 10, that's such a big thing that people are going to want to play for. The thing in Hearthstone is there's a bunch of like tiers you have to build up through until you hit legend status. And everyone wants to play to legend every month, and it resets at the end of every month. And a lot of people are content with just getting to legend. And that'd be fine if we had something that like that in Pokemon. But there should also be a way to push for not just getting to Mewtwo tier, but then push for rank one in a meaningful way, not just win a game, get 10, lose a game, lose 10. So it's just not a, it's not a meaningful rank ladder. It's just not a rank ladder. What they gave us, they advertised, they baited us and advertised us with a rank ladder, and they did not give us a rank ladder. And that's why I'm so kind of frustrated with that, is because they acted as if they were giving us a rank ladder, but then just didn't. So it would have been different if they had been like, we're giving you a rank ladder, and then they gave us a rank ladder, but they're like, we're going to give you a rank ladder, and now you get this. And it's like, that felt pretty shitty. So hopefully, so I do say, hopefully it's another thing they fix, but I'm also tired of us having to tell them to fix things, because we don't work for TPCI. I'm not getting paid, but then it feels like the whole community is the ones who are making the game at this point, which feels, it just, that's what I said, it just feels weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just really unfortunate. I saw a really interesting tweet from Kevin Clementi this week talking about how the Pokemon TCG has the largest, of all the Pokemon games, has the largest consistent competitive player base, right, of people who go to IRL events to compete. Like, there's 5 to 10 times more Pokemon TCG players than video game, than Go, than Pokken, than Unite, whatever it is, as far as people who actually are going and playing in events. But we have the worst ranking system for our online game, which just like doesn't make any sense. I think that, I mean, pretty much every single other game has a very similar tier system to this, where using the Pokeball system, which is what like Pokemon Go and the VGC does and Unite does, is you start with Pokeball tier. Everyone starts in Pokeball tier. As you win a few games, you get up to Master Ball tier. Win a few more games, you get to Ultra Ball tier. And then eventually you get to Master tier. And this is the same system set up in PTCG Live. But once you get to Master Ball tier in every single other game, except for Pokemon Go, I think, you actually see a rank that says where you are compared to someone else in the world. And I know at least for the video game that once you get to that point, it becomes an ELO system of if you play against someone who is a better rank than you, who is like closer to rank one than you, and you beat them, you're going to gain more points than if someone who is really close to ranking you and you beat them, you're going to gain just a few points, right? And that's really what it should be. It should be a system that scales depending on who you play against, what their rank is, determines how you advance or decline through the system. And it's just not like that. It's not a ranked ladder. It's just a progression tracker or something of the sort. So
I don't know what you want to call it. But yeah, we need it. We need it in the game. All the other Pokemon games have it. There's even leaderboards where you can go look at who is rank one, right? It's not even just looking at your own rank or just a number next to your name. You can go see who is rank one. Theoretically, with the PTCG Live thing, we could all at the end of the month tweet out our number, and then we could determine who is rank 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
But see, it's not even a real rank, because it's like so much of like who just played the most, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like if you just have one of the best players in the world just play way more than every of the other best players in the world, they would just end up rank one, right? Because their win rate is just 51%, if they just play a ridiculous amount of games, they will climb.
I mean, you could take a decent player with a 55% win rate versus a top tier player with a 70% win rate, and if the 70% win rate player played for 40 hours in a month, and then the 55% player played for 300 hours in a month, the 55% player is just going to be higher because they played more in this current system. So,
And some amount of commitment should lead you to a better result, but there should also be a way to kind of, you know, grind your way up if you don't play as much, right? Which is what an ELO system can do, is like once you, like if you just come into Mewtwo tier late in the season, there's a bunch of people in Mewtwo tier. As you start to hit, if you're a really good player, as you start to hit people who are better or have a higher rank than you in Mewtwo tier, you're going to beat them because you're a better player and you're going to climb up really, really fast, right? It's like another of those things where it's like we shouldn't have to fight this hard. And this comes back to the whole thing, like, we shouldn't have to fight this hard for this. Listen, if TPCI wants to hire me so I can tell them what to do, I'm open to it. Just send me an email. But if you're not, I shouldn't have to tell you what a ranked ladder is. There's a million examples out there. Valorant and League of Legends definitely do it the best. They have the best system. Almost everyone unanimously agrees, if you've played either of those games, they have it down, right? Go copy them. No one's asking you to reinvent anything. You're not reinventing anything to begin with. the PTCG Live is literally everything in there is a copy of something that's done before. And you're just inputting the Pokemon TCG. You're not creating a game, right? So just go copy someone's rank system and just put it in your game. I'm not asking for much. The community's not asking for much. If you want me to hire me to tell you how to do a bunch of other stuff because you can't do it, then, you know, just send me an email. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Well, we'll move on from the little mini rant about maybe is it a full rant? At what time length does it get to be a full rant versus a mini rant?
I could keep going, so we should cut it here.
So we'll call it mini right here. Okay. And we'll move on.
We're about
that.
To invent the mega rant or something.
And it is time
for everyone's favorite segment. Guess that flavor text, and it's my turn to pick a card for Chip to guess. Guess that flavor text is where one of us picks a card for the other one to try and guess what it is, and the initial hint we give them is just the flavor text on the card, which is a little bit of text in the bottom right corner of the card. Not all cards have it, but most of them do. And then there are a couple lifelines that the other host can choose to use if they want, which are read an attack name, the stage of the card, and then also the set the card is from. Chip, are you ready for this week's flavor text?
Let's do it. I'm ready.
And by the way, I should be leading by 3 points, but I'm only leading by, oh no, I should be leading by 4 points, but I'm only leading by 1 point because I was scared in last week's episode. So let's see if Chip can tie it up or pass me in this one. All right. It's magnificent bark conveys a sense of majesty. Anyone hearing it can't help but grovel before it.
It's magnificent bark. I mean, my first instinct is Furfru, a dog. I mean, it's obviously some sort of dog Pokemon, most likely. Oh, it could be like Arcanine or Growlithe as well. Those are both like majestic Pokemon. I'm thinking Furfru because when I played the X and Y games, I remember that something with Furfru, it was like owned by this person in a fancy house, castle, majestic, something like that. Let me hear the flavor text one more time, Azul.
It's magnificent bark conveys a sense of majesty. Anyone hearing it can't help but grovel before it.
Okay. Yeah, it's. I think one of those three is kind of where I am leaning. There's other dog Pokemon as well. Obviously, Yamper, Boltund, Mightyena, Poochyena. You wouldn't do another Poochyena, though. You already bodied me with Poochyena a couple of weeks ago. I will have to use some lifelines here. Let's go with what set the card is from.
All right, hang on. I just need to confirm it because I had to look it up earlier. It is from Breakpoint.
Breakpoint. See, that's right around the time I started playing the game is when Breakpoint, Breakthrough, those sets came out. So like, I was buying a lot of cards, a lot of packs. And I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering right, I'm pretty sure there's a Growlithe Arcanine line in that set. I'm going to go a little deeper because it could be either of them. I'm pretty sure there's a... I'm kind of picturing the Growlithe, but I'm not picturing what the Arcanine looks like, which is what's bothering me. And maybe there's not a Growlithe in the set now that I'm thinking about it. Let me go with what stage the card is.
It is stage one.
And I'll have you read an attack name. Let's just go through all of them.
Flop.
Flop? Well, there's no shot that's an Arcanine, right? Arcanine. Wait, that's so counterintuitive. This is a majestic Pokemon, but it flops? That's not a majestic
Flopimon.
A Flopimon? It's majestic bark. Is it ever anything that's not a dog?
It's magnificent bark.
Magnificent bark.
Conveys a sense of majesty.
Maybe it's a tree. A Trevenant or something like that. It's magnificent bark. There is a Trevenant in Breakpoint. But Trevenant doesn't have flop. It's not Trevenant. There's no shot.
Trevenant with flop, what is he going to like fall on them? Just like... Actually, any Pokemon with flop just sounds like a weird attack. Like run up to them and just like...
I mean, is it ever like...
Is it ever like Gyarados or no? There's not a Gyarados in the set. It's like an Ancient Origins is the Gyarados I'm thinking of. I don't know, man. I think I'm gonna miss out on points this week. I'm gonna go with Arcanine, but I don't even think there's an Arcanine in this set. Let's go with it though.
It is Arcanine. Let's I was go! So worried. Let's You're about go. To score like 3 or 4 on me.
I said it right away. I gotta look yeah. it up now and remember what this thing looks like. I could not. The main problem is once I asked for breakpoints, is I could not picture this card. That was the issue. I could not picture the card.
I knew once we got to flop, you would use all of the lifelines. So I was hoping you'd guess attack name. You'd ask for the attack name first. So I was like, if I say flop, if he somehow gets the Arcanine and I say flop, or if I get to flop, he's not going to think of Arcanine. So I was like, if we get to flop, it's only going to be 1 point.
Bro,
max.
Why does it have flop? That makes no sense. That really did nuts. Almost totally screw me. Oh, man. Well, we've tied not it up majestic. Now, though. It's been 3-3 for forever. Now we're at 4-4. I almost got 4 points. It wasn't like the first thing I said. I said Furfru, and then I said Arcanine like almost right after.
Yeah, I thought, oh no, I'm done. And then you said a different Pokemon. I was like, all right, there's a chance. Now this will like at least force you to use some lifelines to try and confirm.
Yeah, the breakpoint almost bodied me. I couldn't picture this card. But, you know, we got there, so it works out in the end.
Yeah, so we're tied up 4-4. Let us know in the comment section on the YouTube channel how you all did this week. How many points you got total and how many points you got this week? Let us know in the comment section on the YouTube channel. The last thing we're going to talk about today is gentlemen's agreements in the Pokemon TCG. First, what is a gentleman's agreement? For any of you who don't know, that is where two players make an agreement to if a game does not conclude by the time and turns, extra turns are up. So there's 50 minutes in a regionals for best 2 out of 3. And then after that, you get +3 turns. So after that happens, if a match or game has not concluded, to have the winner be determined by some kind of variable on the board state. It could be who has drawn the most prize cards, who has a better setup, who's going to win the next turn, whatever it might be. Players come to these agreements so that way you're not as often put in situations where, let's say you're on the winning end for day two, you're both 5-2-1, you need 6-2-1 to make day two. So you're on the winning end for day two in day one, and you're in a situation where game three, you know, you don't have enough time to finish game three, but you're in the middle of it, and you've both established setups, and you've made the agreement, okay, whoever has the most prize cards drawn will get the other person will concede. Now, there is no official rulings on gentlemen's agreements. So Chip, you want to go over the what is the official statement from TPCR or whatever on it?
Yeah, I mean, I do want to say as well, for a long time they were expressly not allowed.
Yes.
You were not allowed for a very, very long time to make a gentleman's agreements. Now, sometimes players would still kind of just like hint, hint, wink, wink, hey, if I think you're going to win, I will concede to you. If we go to time, and then the other player would be like, you know what, I would do the same thing. That was like the extent yes. of what was acceptable. But now you're able to kind of discuss it and talk about it a little more. And it is briefly mentioned. I think I accidentally.
Yeah, you're allowed to basically say, if you're ahead on prize cards, or if you're going to win the game in game 3 and we go to time and turns finish, I will concede to you. And that was basically inviting the opportunity for your opponent to say the same thing. And that wasn't against the rules. So if a judge overheard you, they wouldn't do anything about it. And that was basically you guys, that was a gentleman's agreement without kind of talking things through. But now you can basically be like, yo, if time comes up in game 3, what if one of us is ahead on prize cards, and your opponent could be like, what if we did it on board state? Like, if we can obviously tell who's going
to
win the game.
Be like, what do you want to do if we are going to go to time? Do you want to work something out and figure out? And it's like the best time to do it if you're trying to make a gentleman's agreement with someone is usually before the match starts or going into game 3 if you know there's like 10 minutes left or something like that, right? Where it's like probably not going to be enough time to finish the game unless someone gets really unlucky and gets donked or something like that. Those are like usually the two times where it's best to kind of come up with something.
A warning to put out there first is gentlemen's agreements cannot be made around a random variable. You can't flip a coin, you can't roll a die, you can't do rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, and that's what those things are outlined here in the rule book now. So here's from the Pokemon Tournament Rules Handbook. Here's what it says about it's section 4.5 for anyone who wants to go look it up. Concessions and intentional draws. The result of a match should always be decided by gameplay above all else. I think everyone would agree with that. However, players are permitted to concede to their opponent or to make a single offer to draw the game. A player may decide to concede for any reason. However, Pokemon Organized Play does not recognize any informal agreements made between players regarding the outcome of a match prior to the signing of the match slip. Players should be aware that any such agreements will not be enforced by tournament staff. So this is recognizing the existence of, I mean, gentleman's agreement is kind of just the term that has been cool. I mean, it's like a term that exists outside of Pokemon as well, obviously, but it's just kind of, this is Pokemon recognizing, okay, this exists, you can do it, we just cannot enforce it. If your opponent says, hey, I'll concede to you if you're ahead on prizes, and then it gets down to the end of turns, you're ahead on prizes, and your opponent's like, you know what, never mind, I don't want to, I'll take the tie. The tournament staff can't come around and enforce it and say, no, you said you would do it, so we're going to give this player the win. They can't do that. You know, you can always, there is nothing stopping you. I shouldn't say you can always. There's nothing stopping you from taking back your gentleman's agreement. Now, it does make you kind of a bad person. And
yeah, I think morally.
Morally, it should, something should prevent you. And let me just finish reading this real quick, and then we'll talk more about it. Once a match result has been recorded on a signed match slip, that result is considered final and cannot be changed. Players may not ask their opponent to concede, ask again for an intentional draw once their opponent has made it clear they do not wish to do so. Players may not bribe, coerce, or otherwise pressure their opponent into any match result. Players may not refer to tournament standings or wait for other matches in progress to resolve before deciding to concede or draw. Players may not decide the result of a match through random means or through any other choosing method. This would be something like flipping a dice, rock, paper, scissors, anything like that. I have seen people get disqualified from the tournament for flipping a dice to see who would win a game because they were going to time. This is not the way to resolve it. It has to be, if you make a gentleman's agreement, it's got to be through the means of, you know, board state. I think I would win this game if it went one more turn, or, you know, you have more prize cards than me, you win the game, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's the only way you can determine the outcome of the games. One of the reasons we wanted to talk about this is a fairly notable player in the community, Maze, had tweeted that they had a gentleman's agreement with an opponent at Lille Regionals, and their opponent went back on the gentleman's agreement, right? So Maze and their opponent agreed that, you know, if something happens, one player or the other should get the win, right? And it sounds like Maze was the one who had the advantage, and the opponent had agreed to concede to them if that came up and there wasn't enough time to finish the game, and then they decided to take the tie instead. So I think me and Chip both agree, and most people probably should, you shouldn't make a gentleman's agreement unless you're going to uphold it. And yeah, you don't have to, though. Don't feel pressured to either. If your opponent puts the offer out there, you can decline and simply play the game. But if you agree to a gentleman's agreement, I guess a big thing is you shouldn't feel pressure to accept gentleman's agreements or to have one going into those kind of situations where a tie would basically be irrelevant for both of you, right? And that's basically the main scenarios where this happens. Like, you know, like I said, on a winning into day two, 5-2-1, if you guys tie, neither of you make day two, and you maybe you're in a situation where you both feel like you'd rather have one of you get there, right? Yeah. So that's when you'd want to have something like a gentleman's agreement in place to make sure that time isn't the deciding factor for that match, right? Don't feel pressured or don't feel like you have to. But if you do agree to one, it's pretty scummy to go back on it. And I think one of the big things we wanted to talk about was Maze called out the player by name. And if TPCI or Pokemon in general isn't going to do anything about gentlemen's agreements and forcing them to be upheld, which I think is fair for them, right? Because that's a huge thing they'd have to police. Does it kind of come down to the community to kind of self-police and self-report when a person goes back on a gentleman's agreement? Should they just be called out on Twitter and be like, listen, don't make gentlemen's agreements with this person. They will only do it if it ends up in their advantage. They went back on one with me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really the only solution. And I'm not trying to put this out there as a way that you should, like, you know, send hate towards any of these players or, like, you know, send them messages and say, like, hey, you did this and this makes you a bad person. I don't think you, like, people should go out of their way to be hateful towards these people. But I think just for awareness's sake, it's the only way that you would know this person. If we go into a game and we make a gentleman's agreement, this person has been known to back out of them before. I don't think it's a good idea for me to make this agreement. Because at the end of the day, I mean, even if it's better for one of you to get the win, a tie usually will still yield you a chance at championship points, or maybe if we're talking about the winning into top eight or something like that, it'll still yield you, you know, some more prize money, anything like that, as opposed to taking a loss. So there is always the incentive to still take a tie, which would be the reason that someone would back out of an agreement that they had previously made, where it's like, I would rather one of us make top 32 or day two or whatever it might be, but I would still take the championship points. So I think, you know, yeah, what, we'll take the tie. And I think it's also tough as well, because sometimes, you know, it's really difficult, I think, to make an agreement on board state, because if the game is still mid game and you're not sure who's going to win, there's a chance that you're just not going to agree who's going to win the game, because, I think, like, you know, if we're talking about a game that's in, like, turn three, turn four, both players are probably going to feel like they have a reasonable shot to win most of the time still, right? And so that's where things become iffy, and then maybe that's a situation where you end up just still tying. But I think what becomes scummy is whenever you recognize, okay, my opponent would beat me, but I'm going to just take the tie anyway. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's fine if you guys agree on board state but then disagree on board state. I think it's respectable, and both players should respect the other player's opinion in that situation. I think if it can sometimes be pretty obvious to tell when it's like one player's just saying that to not have to, you know,
yeah,
be the
if
one
it's
to
like
6-1
concede. Prizes and they just needed one more turn and they have like the boss, yeah, for game in hand or something like that, you know, like,
yeah, there's not much arguing to be done. Yeah. It doesn't matter if you have a Marnie or a Roxanne, they're probably still beating you. And if you're going to uphold your end of the gentleman's agreement, then you should concede. And it's kind of a, once again, because it's not enforced, it's kind of something the community, I think, has to take on themselves to kind of enforce, try and hopefully enforce good habits in these situations. And I have heard of many players in the past kind of being like, who had a gentleman's agreement established, or they're in a situation where they're going to win, but because they want someone to at least make day two, they end up conceding to their opponent anyways. And that only reinforces those players' bad habits, right? If you're in a situation where you make a gentleman's agreement with your opponent and your opponent decides they don't want to concede to you, where you're like, well, I'm going to be like the good person, the better person, I'll just concede to you, you can get to day two, that's fine. Yeah, you're just reinforcing their habit of, oh, I can just do this again. I can make a, yeah, gentleman's agreement, and then when it doesn't go my way, I can just be like, eh, I don't know, I still kind of want to tie. I don't know if I want to give you the win. And then if that next person just is like, all right, you know what, fine, man, it's not a big deal, you can have the win, good luck in day two. Then once again, they go to another regional, and on the win in day two, they're going to be like, they're going to do the same thing. They're just going to make the gentleman's agreement, and when it falls their way, they take advantage of it. And when it goes the opponent's way, they're going to be, eh, I'm just going to take the tie instead, right? And try and, you know, scumbag out a win. Or kind of manipulate their opponent to try and concede to them instead of, you know, upholding the gentleman's agreement to begin with. So don't on top of that, you might feel like you're being, you know, the bigger person in those scenarios, but don't give in.
You're reinforcing.
You're reinforcing that bad behavior from the players. And this does feel like a situation where the community really has to kind of self-police, self-report. And I think it is fair if you're going to be one of those players who goes back on a gentleman's agreement, I think it's fair for someone to tweet out your name on Twitter and be like, look, don't agree to a gentleman's agreement with this person. They will only allow it to progress if it's in their favor. I think, because it basically feels like that. Like, we have to self-report on this, yeah, one, I think.
And again, not out of a place of like sending hate to anyone. It's out of a, yeah, place of just being aware of, okay, I shouldn't agree to anything with this person. And I think this whole discussion can kind of show why for such a long time gentlemen's agreements were not allowed, because it gets really sticky and really tough, and you know, people, you got people who are just gonna go back on their word, and that's on, yeah, them. You know, they gotta, you know, you can go to sleep at night with your head held high knowing I would have done the right thing, and your opponent, you know, they just gotta sleep with the fact that they're a bad person, and at a children's card game, they yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, so definitely pretty I mean, and listen, we can always just hope for the best for people, right? Like, we always want the best for people, right? So hopefully if they did it once, the next time they're in that situation, they'll do the right thing and either, and if they make a gentleman's agreement, you know, they will uphold it if it doesn't go their way, right? We can only hope the best from, you know, people to grow and become better people, right? For sure. So yeah, I was saying, don't send hate. So don't send hate to people who do get called out for not upholding gentlemen's agreements. I think it is fine to call out people for not upholding gentlemen's agreements. Don't be super toxic about it. Don't try and send hate their way. Just be like, look, if you play against this player, they don't uphold gentlemen's agreements unless it goes in their favor. So don't make a gentleman's agreement with them, right? And don't feel pressured to have to make a gentleman's agreement. I think that's a big thing as well. Just don't, if you don't feel comfortable making a gentleman's agreement, just don't do it. But if you do it, you better uphold it. Otherwise, you're getting tweeted about after the tournament.
And also, while we're on the topic, I think something maybe worth just kind of quickly bringing up is, like, where do you normally go as far as gentlemen's agreements, like board state, prize cards, something like that? I think the least subjective one is to go off of prize cards, but that... You know, I mean, we both know that in a game of Pokemon, whoever is ahead on prize cards is not always the person who's going to win that game. So I think that most of the time, it seems like people go with board state, but that is the most subjective thing because it can be at a point in the game where everyone thinks like they have a chance to win.
Yeah, so I always do board state, but I know I'm very objective with how I view the game of Pokemon in general. So I generally just know who is going to be ahead in pretty much any situation. And I've conceded multiple times where I've had that agreement with my opponent where we've been like, okay, actually, I don't think I've ever had a gentleman's agreement go my way. in the times that I've made them, it's always gone my opponent's way. And I've conceded multiple times to my opponent when they just have the board advantage. Right. And it could have been a tie, or I could have, like, we're in game three and there was still enough time for me to make it a tie. But I was either just going to lose no matter what, or they had the advantage once the time expired. And I was like, all right, you got the match, right?
Have you ever had a disagreement about board state?
No. No, because, yeah, like I said, it's always gone in my opponent's favor. So there's no disagreement ever been had. I can't think of a time where it's ever gone where we ever had the gentleman's agreement that I'm the one who actually had my opponent concede to me based on a gentleman's agreement. I've had people just, like, kind of concede to me in game threes before when it's close to time. And they're like, all right, you can have it. I'm going to lose anyway. So, but I've never had it actually be based on a gentleman's agreement, I don't think. I thought I can remember. I played a lot of Pokemon, though. So
I think I haven't. I mean, I don't play in as many tournaments as you, especially not anymore. But for a while when I was competing, and I think that was back whenever you couldn't even, like, officially make one. You had to go the roundabout way of saying, like, if you are ahead on prize cards, I will concede to you. And then your opponent was like, okay, if you are ahead on prize cards, I will concede to you. And so that's what our agreement was without there being an agreement, right? This was at a tournament. Yeah. And so this would be a reason as to why you wouldn't go off of prize cards versus board state, because I was able to play the game in a way where it wasn't going to end up being a winning spot for me. But because I was, like, turn three of time and I knew if I did this, my opponent, I would go ahead on prize cards, even if it was, like, a knockout that's not going to ultimately win me the game. It's going to make me go ahead on prize cards. And my opponent said that, so they're going to concede to me. And that's what ended up happening, right? And because that was the agreement we had made, my opponent conceded to me, right? And so that can be a reason to go off of board state instead. But again, this was at the time where, like, you couldn't discuss these things. It was like a hush-hush.
You can make one statement. You can make one statement and hope your opponent repeated the exact same statement. Yes, and then that was the agreement.
And I think my opponent was the one who even said, like, if you are ahead on prize cards, I will concede to you. And so I was like, okay, I will do the same thing So. But anyway, that's the podcast this week. A lot went down. The little results, of course, and then, you know, the thing that makes you a scummy Pokemon player. the worst thing you can do as a Pokemon TCG player. So
something you can not do, prevent doing to not be a scummy Pokemon player as well. So now you've learned what not to do to not
moral
be
of the story. Just be honest. Be a decent human. Honestly,
it doesn't take much.
If more people were just decent humans, the world would be a better place.
it would. Yeah. And once again, I want to just one more time. Don't feel pressure to have to make a gentleman. You don't have to. But if you do, then it's on you. It's if you're going to, you know, go back on it. So. Yeah. No one's making you do anything, though.
Well, thanks so much to everyone for tuning in to the cast this week. As always, we very much appreciate the support. As always, if you enjoyed listening either on YouTube or on your favorite podcasting platform, we'd really appreciate either a like on the video or a review on your podcasting platform of choice. Those things go a long way to help us out. Also, like, less than 50% of the people who watch the videos are actually, or sorry, more than 50% of the people who watch the YouTube channel videos are not subscribed to the YouTube channel. Click that subscribe button. Helps us out. Lets us know you enjoy the content. And it takes just 1 second. And it's free. You know, win-win.
Yeah. Appreciate the support as always. We'll catch you next Tuesday, 7 a.m. EST.
You got to put no the major socials, tournament. Bro. Don't forget the Twitter.
Oh yeah, check us out on Twitter. I'm at Azul_GG. Chip is at Trainer Chip, and then the podcast at Uncommon_Energy. And I believe that does it all. No major tournaments for a couple weeks, but they'll be kicking back up soon. And the new set of courses releasing soon as well. So a lot to talk about in the future. Catch you all next week. Peace.